Good morning. It's Tuesday, May 21st. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shumita Basu. This is Apple News Today. Coming up on today's show, the aftermath in Iran of the president's death, understanding the downfall of Red Lobster, and the portals connecting New York City to Dublin. But first, prosecutors have rested their case in Donald Trump's criminal trial in New York. They have tried to prove to a jury that Trump falsified business records in order to conceal a hush money payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels over an alleged affair. Prosecutors have argued that it was all part of a scheme to silence that story in order to help Trump's presidential campaign in 2016, which would elevate the alleged crime to a felony. Over the course of 4 weeks, the prosecution has called 20 witnesses, including Daniels, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, and Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. He is the prosecution's most crucial witness, in part because he's the only one that can directly tie Donald Trump to the allegedly falsified business records. Cohen just wrapped 4 days of testimony, which included tense exchanges with Trump's lawyers. They tried to discredit him as a liar and called attention to his past crimes. Kara Scannell has been inside the courtroom reporting for CNN, and she spoke about Cohen's testimony on CNN's podcast, One Thing.
It's just a question now of, did Donald Trump's team get enough nicks in Michael Cohen's credibility to have a juror have pause of, do you convict a former president and a current front runner for the Republican Party based on the evidence that they've heard and on Michael Cohen's testimony?
From the beginning, some legal observers have said this will be a tough case for the prosecution to prove. They don't just have the unprecedented job of convincing a jury to convict a former president, but they also have to show a very specific intent. Here's Boston University law professor Jed Sugarman on the NPR podcast Trump's Trials.
One of the key lines that Cohen testified about was that Trump wanted to make this go away. And it seemed like a lot of people have interpreted the make this go away as Trump's intent related to the campaign. Mm-hmm. The prosecutors need to show more than that, I think. They need to show more than just that this was campaign related. They have to prove a crime that was being covered up by these documents.
Yesterday, Trump's attorneys called lawyer Robert Costello as a witness. He'd consulted with Cohen in the past and contradicted some of his testimony. Costello was argumentative with Judge Juan Merchan and the prosecution. And at one point, the judge threatened to remove him from the witness stand. Trump's attorneys did not indicate plans to call additional witnesses today. That would mean that Trump himself would likely not testify. And that's in line with what Sugarman and many other legal analysts have expected.
There's no way that the defense counsel wants to put Trump on the stand because he's so unpredictable. At this point, I think they probably see that there are sufficient gaps in the prosecutor's case, and putting Trump on the stand could only give prosecutors the chance to close those gaps.
The judge has told attorneys to prepare closing arguments for next Tuesday. Then Trump's fate will be in the jury's hands. Now let's look at some other stories that are in the news. President Biden said it's, quote, outrageous that the International Criminal Court is seeking the arrest of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israeli Defense Minister for war crimes charges related to Gaza. Hamas officials were also named. Biden said there is, quote, no equivalence between Hamas and Israel. It will now be up to a panel of judges to consider whether to issue those arrest warrants. In Iran, the country is observing 5 days of mourning following the helicopter crash that killed President Ibrahim Raisi and the country's foreign minister. State media refers to the crash as a technical failure. The area where the chopper went down was mountainous, and it was foggy on Sunday. Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says the deaths will not disrupt the country's operations. And in the U.S., FDIC Chair Martin Grunberg is resigning. His leadership has been in question since an investigation into the bank regulatory agency found widespread sexual harassment, bullying, and discrimination. The FDIC commissioned this investigation following a Wall Street Journal report last year. an iconic American food chain has filed for bankruptcy. You may have seen the headlines about Red Lobster and how its endless shrimp deal sank the company. But to blame the shrimp alone would miss the full story. Really, it's a story of massive mismanagement, a series of bad business choices, and what happens when private equity takes over everything in our lives. You see, a big sign of trouble came for the seafood chain in 2013, when prices for shrimp went way up, revenue dropped, and the owner at the time decided to sell Red Lobster to a private equity firm. Now, by this point, Red Lobster had hundreds of locations across the country. The land was sold to raise money for the deal and then leased back to the company. So Red Lobster was paying rent for real estate it used to own. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Haddon in a recent video report.
Restaurant leasebacks can be kind of common in restaurants. It's something other chains do. The positive is you get a whole chunk of capital way up front. The negative is there can be consequences down the chain.
For Red Lobster, those consequences hit hard. It got stuck in leases it couldn't afford, and the private equity firm saddled the seafood chain with tons of debt. Later, there was a revolving door of CEOs, five since 2021. One former executive told CNN that menu decisions were driven by executive opinion versus customer preferences. The company asked employees to take on more work without providing extra resources in an effort to cut costs. Then there's the endless shrimp deal. Red Lobster made all-you-can-eat shrimp for $20, a year-round thing. The bankruptcy filing points out that a major shareholder in the company was a seafood distributor. And the filing says that the CEO gave it an exclusive deal to provide shrimp to the chain, which drove up costs. All-you-can-eat shrimp might have been good for that relationship with the big shareholder, but it was a potential conflict of interest. In public, there's been a lot of focus on the damage done by the unlimited shrimp deal. But the bigger picture of Red Lobster was a story of bad corporate choices that caused the iconic seafood chain to flounder. Public artwork has the ability to delight and unite us, but it can also bring out some bad instincts. The creators of a portal project that features a live stream between New York City and Dublin found that out recently. So basically, in each city, there is a giant circular structure with a screen showing Dublin folks what's going on in New York at that moment, and vice versa. The portals were briefly shut down following a few incidents of public nudity and some unfortunate displays of upsetting and, in some cases, racist imagery. The creator, a Lithuanian artist named Benedikta Gila, told the New York Fox affiliate that the bad behavior took him by surprise.
We didn't see that coming. So in a way, our team was upset that somehow we were so focused on bringing the portal to New York, and we did not optimize the software for all the potential behaviors that might happen.
The portals reopened this past weekend, and now there are a few more guardrails, actual fencing to keep people from stepping on the installation, and a feature where if someone tries to obstruct the camera, the live stream is blurred out. It's also only open during certain hours now, and security is on site. People seem to be enjoying the reopening. The New York Times saw a game of rock, paper, scissors play out yesterday. There was a brief effort at the Macarena as well. There was also a transatlantic version of The Wave, a lot of actual waving too. One excited New Yorker told Fox, "It's like living in the future."
It's amazing, and it's nice to share love, you know, with some other people in the world, especially at this time.
You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening to the News app right now, we have a narrated article coming up next. The New Yorker and ProPublica teamed up to dig into the history of 3M. The company is among those responsible for the creation of forever chemicals, which don't break down in the environment. These contaminants have been found in drinking water and the bloodstreams of humans and animals. The New Yorker and ProPublica spoke to a scientist who found evidence of this decades ago while working at 3M and says her bosses stopped her work. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story, and I'll be back with the news tomorrow.